Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The Arizona Supreme Court issued a ruling that creates a near-total abortion ban in the state of Arizona. A ban with no exceptions for rape and incest. A ban that will apply to women before they even know they are pregnant. And threatens prison time for nurses and doctors.
Arizona Supreme Court bars almost all abortions in the state by reviving an 1864 law passed before Arizona was a state and before women could even vote. We'll get the latest. Then President Biden calls Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's policies in Gaza a mistake.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out.
We'll speak with Middle East analyst Muin Rabbani, and we'll be joined by two former Israeli soldiers, members of Breaking the Silence, an anti-occupation group led by veterans of the Israeli army. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In an historic ruling, Arizona's conservative Supreme Court has reinstated an 1864 law barring almost all abortions in the state. In its ruling, the court wrote, quote, "Physicians are now on notice that all abortions, except those necessary to save a woman's life, are illegal," unquote. The 160-year-old law predates Arizona becoming a state and was passed decades before women could even vote. While the court stayed its decision for 14 days, the ruling sent shockwaves across Arizona and the nation. President Biden slammed the ruling as extreme and dangerous. Arizona's Attorney General Chris Mays said she will not enforce it, saying, quote, "No woman or doctor will be prosecuted under this draconian law." Arizona's Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs vowed to protect abortion rights.
Arizona's 2022 abortion ban is extreme and hurts women. And the near-total Civil War-era ban that continues to hang over our heads only serves to create more chaos for women and doctors in our state. As governor, I promised I would do everything in my power to protect our reproductive freedoms.
Last week, the group Arizona for Abortion Access said it had collected enough signatures, over 500,000, to put a measure on the ballot in November to enshrine abortion rights in Arizona. Reproductive rights will also play a key role in Arizona's closely watched Senate race. Republican candidate Carrie Lake criticized the court's ruling Tuesday, even though just 2 years ago she called it a, quote, "great law." The Arizona ruling came just a day after Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump said abortion should be decided by the states. We'll have more on Arizona after headlines. President Biden's leveled some of his harshest criticism of Israel yet as the death toll in Gaza tops 33,300. In an interview with Univision, Biden directly criticized Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel's killing of 7 aid workers from World Central Kitchen last week.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving here, et cetera. So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire, allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country.
Biden's comments were made a week ago, but only aired on Univision on Tuesday. Palestinians in Gaza are making the end of Ramadan as Israel continues its assault. Officials in Gaza say at least 14 Palestinians, including four children, have died in Israeli strikes on the Nusayrat refugee camp. On Monday, Israel assassinated the mayor of the Al-Maghazi refugee camp. Hamas accused Israel of committing a war crime.
The Israeli occupation's army committed a crime yesterday with the assassination of Al-Maghazi municipal chief Hatem Saleh Al-Ghamri. He's known as a civilian, a municipal head, who provides municipal services since the first day of this war, this genocide against civilians and civil sectors. The Israeli occupation's army purposefully targeted Al-Ghamri, even though they are fully aware that he's a civil servant and only works within that framework at Al-Maghazi refugee camp.
On Capitol Hill, about 50 protesters were arrested Tuesday when they blocked access to the Senate cafeteria, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters also disrupted Lloyd Austin during a Senate hearing where the defense secretary was questioned by Republican Senator Tom Carton of Arkansas.
I want to address what the protesters raised earlier. Is Israel committing genocide in Gaza?
Senator Cotton, we don't have any evidence of genocide being created.
So that's a no. Israel's not committing genocide in Gaza.
We don't have evidence of that, to my knowledge. Yeah.
That was Lloyd Austin speaking with Arkansas's Republican Senator Tom Cotton. Turkey's announced it will restrict exports to Israel until Israel declares a ceasefire in Gaza and allows in more aid. Israel blasted Turkey's decision, accusing it of blackmail. The first criminal trial of a former U.S. president appears set to begin Monday after Donald Trump lost his 10th attempt to delay the trial. But Trump's appeal could still be heard by a full panel of five appellate court judges. Trump's accused of falsifying business records to hide hush money payments to adult film star Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election. In 2018, Trump's lawyer Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to making the payments for Trump and spent over a year in prison. The state of Missouri executed Brian Dorsey Tuesday despite a rare call by 70 prison guards and a former warden for his life to be spared. Dorsey was convicted in 2006 for murdering his cousin and her husband while high on drugs. He later turned himself in and pleaded guilty. Prison guards at the Potosi Correctional Center recently wrote to Missouri Governor Mike Parson urging him to commute Dorsey's death sentence. They cited his unblemished record in prison, during which time he became a popular barber who cut the hair of both prisoners and staff. The guards wrote, quote, "He doesn't deserve to be executed. We know that he was convicted of murder, but that is not the Brian Dorsey that we know," unquote. In Michigan, the parents of Ethan Crumbly, who shot dead four classmates at Oxford High School in 2021, have been sentenced to between 10 and 15 years in prison. James and Jennifer Crumbly are the first parents to be held criminally responsible for a mass school shooting committed by their child. During the sentencing hearing, Nicole Beausoleil, the mother of Madison Baldwin, who died in the school shooting, addressed the Crumblys.
"You say you wouldn't do anything different. Well, that really says on what type of parents you are, because there's a lot of things I would do different. But the one thing I would have wanted to be different was to take that bullet that day so she could continue to live the life she deserved."
New York City's reached a $28 million settlement in a lawsuit brought forward by the family of a former Rikers prisoner who suffered severe brain damage after attempting to hang himself in a cell while guards watched without intervening. Nicholas Feliciano was 18 years old at the time and had a history of severe mental illness and previous suicide attempts. He was imprisoned at Rikers over a parole violation in late 2019 when he tried to hang himself while more than half a dozen guards stood by. They did not interfere until Feliciano became unconscious and limp. Three of the guards and a captain were charged with felonies in 2022. If approved, the settlement will be among the largest pretrial settlements ever awarded to a single plaintiff in a civil rights case in New York City. In Chicago, the family of Dexter Reed is calling for charges against the police officers who shot and killed Reed after a traffic stop last month. Newly released body cam video shows plainclothes Chicago police officers fired nearly 100 shots in just 41 seconds. It remains unclear why officers assigned to a tactical unit pulled over Reed, who was black, or why they approached his car with guns drawn. Police initially said Reed was pulled over because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, but Reed was driving in a car with tinted windows. Police claim the shootout began after Reed fired the first shot. And the railroad giant Norfolk Southern has agreed to pay $600 million to settle a class action lawsuit over last year's train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. The disaster led to a massive explosion, the release of toxic chemicals, including levels of dioxin hundreds of times higher than what's considered safe. Many local residents say they fear the settlement will not come close to covering future health care expenses. East Palestine resident Chrissy Ferguson criticized the settlement, saying, quote, "I just feel like we've been victimized over and over and over again." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, in an historic ruling, Arizona's conservative Supreme Court has reinstated an 1864 law barring almost all abortions in the state. In its ruling, the court wrote, quote, "Physicians are now on notice that all abortions except those necessary to save a woman's life are illegal," unquote. The 160-year-old law predates Arizona becoming a state and was passed before women could even vote. While the court has stayed its decision for 14 days, the ruling sent shockwaves across Arizona and the nation. President Biden slammed the ruling as extreme and dangerous. Arizona's Attorney General Chris Mays said she will not enforce it, saying, quote, "No woman or doctor will be prosecuted under this draconian law." Arizona's Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs vowed to protect abortion rights.
Arizona's 2022 abortion ban is extreme and hurts women. And the near total Civil War era ban that continues to hang over our heads only serves to create more chaos for women and doctors in our state. As governor, I promised I would do everything in my power to protect our reproductive freedoms.
Last week, the group Arizona for Abortion Access said it had collected enough signatures, over 500,000, to put a measure on the November ballot to enshrine abortion rights in Arizona. Reproductive rights will also play a key role in Arizona's closely watched Senate race. Republican candidate Carrie Lake criticized the court's ruling Tuesday, even though just 2 years ago she called it, quote, "a great law." The Arizona ruling came just a day after Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump said abortion should be decided by the states. For more, we're joined by Amy Littlefield, abortion access correspondent at The Nation magazine. Amy, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you talk about the significance of this ruling in Arizona?
Good morning, Amy. And I just want to deeply apologize. I didn't have time to put on my whalebone corset and my hoop skirt this morning before appearing on television. I know there might be men watching. I hope the anti-vice squad doesn't come after me for disseminating information about abortion, which is what I'm about to do here. In all seriousness, though, I think what's become abundantly clear, both at the federal level and at the state level now in Arizona, is that the central strategy of the anti-abortion movement is to roll back the clock to the Victorian era, because they know that they cannot win through the democratic process, because abortion rights are popular. They always have been popular. But now the abortion rights majority in this country is mobilized and angry, and they know they can't win at the ballot box. And so they are combing through zombie laws from the 19th century to see if they can restrict abortion that way, which is not only anti-abortion, but deeply anti-democratic as well. So this is a law that is coming back into force in Arizona that dates back to a time before women could vote, that dates back to a time before slavery was ended, when, you know, black women in large swaths of the country were still considered chattel. This dates back to an an era where we had widespread regulation, not just of abortion, but of anything that was considered vice or, you know, immoral. It dates back to an era where we had the Federal Comstock Act, right? In 1873, the Federal Comstock Act, which was used to restrict abortion, drugs, and devices through the mail. This law, you know, from 1873, which hasn't been enforced in many, many years, is now the central strategy of the anti-abortion movement at the federal level. They're trying to bring it back into force to create a nationwide anti-abortion ban because, of course, again, they can't win in the court of public opinion. So we're seeing this also in Florida, another state that recently had a really important abortion ruling that could lead to the instatement May 1st of a 6-week ban in that state, where justices on the conservative Supreme Court in that state seem to be flirting with the idea that personhood for fetuses and embryos is protected under the Florida Constitution. The key caveat here, of course, is that we're going to see abortion on the ballot in Arizona and Florida, and so the people are going to have their say. I want to just make one more important point, Amy, which is abortion is still, this ruling is not in effect in Arizona. The Florida ruling is also not in effect yet, which means that Florida abortion is still legal up to 15 weeks. Arizona abortion clinics, as far as I know, as of this moment, are still providing services. And so you can go to ineedana.com or plancypills.org to find up-to-date information about access to abortion, regardless of where you live.
And Amy, what do you make of the statements, the public statements of the Attorney General in Arizona, Chris Mays, and of the governor in direct opposition to the court's decision? What do you think is going to be the impact? As you were mentioning, there will likely be a ballot question now in Arizona on abortion. What do you think will be the impact on turnout and the central question of abortion in this upcoming election?
Absolutely. I mean, Arizona activists were already working on a ballot initiative to protect the right to abortion in that state. Florida activists have also cleared hurdles to put the question of abortion rights on the ballot in that state. We're going to see it on the ballot in other states too, where the stakes aren't quite as high. And you know, this could swing the election, right? I mean, there's no question. The Biden administration, the Biden campaign, started paying attention to Florida, started buying ads in Florida right after the court decision, reviving the 6-week ban there. Arizona was already considered a battleground state, so there's no question that Democrats are banking on this being a huge way to lift their boats in the next election. I mean, the key caveat there is, look, if Democrats want to win on the issue of abortion, I think they're going to have to start listening to reproductive justice activists who are saying, number one, what's going on in Gaza right now is a reproductive justice issue. And if you are going to be an administration that claims to support, you know, reproductive rights and justice, you cannot support what's going on with the Israeli bombardment of Gaza right now. And number two, they need to repeal the Comstock Act. Again, we could see a replication of what's happening in Arizona at the federal level. This is not a pro-life movement. This is a pro-zombie movement. And they are trying to bring back these zombie laws from the 19th century. And if it can happen in Arizona, it can happen at the federal level if the Comstock Act comes back into force. And we saw recently in arguments before the Supreme Court that at least two justices on the Supreme Court seem very eager to bring the Comstock Act back into effect and roll this entire country back to the Victorian era.
Do you feel hopeful when you see the response of Republicans in Arizona? I mean, you have Carrie Lake, who hailed this law 2 years ago, now saying it was a bad decision. You have former Governor Ducey, who appointed 5 of the 7 state Supreme Court justices who made this decision to go back 150 years, saying it wasn't a good decision. Carrie Lake, of course, going up against Ruben Gallego for the Senate race. He is already raising this as a major issue.
Yes, Amy, I feel nothing short of sheer delight when I see Republicans running from this issue in that way. I mean, they understand the writing is on the wall. Abortion was popular before the Dobbs decision, right? A majority, overwhelming majority of the population wants abortion to be legal in all onerous circumstances. That was true. That's been true for many years. After Dobbs, that population is angry. They are motivated. They are voting. They are organizing. And Republicans and Democrats alike understand this. So I'm not surprised to see Republicans running from this issue, backtracking on their own, you know, anti-abortion statements, trying to hide from, you know, anyone who wants to ask them questions about that. Again, I think this is the sleeping giant of the pro-abortion rights majority in this country has been awakened. We saw that in Kansas right after the Dobbs decision, right, where this ruby red state, you know, voted to protect abortion rights in the state. And so I think, you know, that's, again, a reason for Democrats to be very encouraged and Republicans to be very discouraged in states like Arizona and Florida, where abortion is likely going to be directly on the ballot. But again, Democrats can't just coast to victory on that, right? If they're going to purport to be the candidate that represents the reproductive health rights and justice movement, they've got to start listening to that movement's demands.
Interestingly, Vice President Kamala Harris is headed to Tucson on Friday to give a speech on this issue. Amy Littlefield, want to thank you for being with us, abortion access correspondent at The Nation magazine. When we come back, Israeli airstrikes continue in Gaza on the first day of Eid, and there's been little increase in humanitarian aid being allowed in. We'll be joined by Middle East analyst Muin Rabbani. Stay with us. Zaret El Medain by Feruz. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I am Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. President Biden called Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's policies in Gaza a mistake and urged Israel to call for a temporary ceasefire to allow in more aid. Biden's comments came in an interview that aired Tuesday on the Spanish-language TV network Univision. In his remarks, Biden highlighted the Israeli airstrike last week on an aid convoy that killed 7 aid workers with the food charity World Central Kitchen. 6 of those aid workers international.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving there, etc. So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire, allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country. I've spoken with everyone from the Saudis to the Jordanians to the Egyptians. They're prepared to move in. They're prepared to move this food in. And I think there's no excuse to not provide for the medical and the food needs of those people. They should be done now.
Following the airstrike on the World Central Kitchen convoy last week, Biden called Netanyahu and warned for the first time the U.S. would be forced to change its policy if Israel did not change its policies in Gaza. Israel responded by pledging to open new aid crossings. However, the UN said Tuesday there's been, quote, no significant change in the volume of humanitarian supplies entering Gaza, unquote. And the Biden administration has not actually changed its policies or withheld any arms transfers to Israel. This comes as Human Rights Watch is calling on governments to impose targeted sanctions on Israel and suspend arms transfers to press the Israeli government to ensure access to humanitarian aid. The rights group has accused the Israeli government of using starvation as a weapon of war. At least 32 people, including 28 children, have died of malnutrition and dehydration in northern Gaza, where famine is setting in. In the south, at least 5% of children under age 2 were found to be acutely malnourished. Meanwhile, Israeli airstrikes continue across Gaza, including dozens of strikes in Gaza City, as well as in central Gaza, where an airstrike hit a home in the Nusayrat refugee camp today, killing at least 14 people, including 5 children. For more, we're joined by Middle East analyst Muin Rabbani. He's an editor of Jedalia and host of the Connections podcast. He's a contributor to the new book, Deluge, Gaza and Israel from Crisis to Cataclysm. He was previously a senior analyst for the International Crisis Group. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us here in studio in New York. I wanted to start off with a clip yesterday. British Foreign Minister David Cameron stood with Secretary of State Antony Blinken at a news conference. They were at the State Department. Cameron said Britain's position on arms sales to Israel was unchanged.
The latest assessment leaves our position on export licenses unchanged. This is consistent with the advice that I and other ministers have received. And as ever, we will keep the position under review. Let me be clear, though, we continue to have grave concerns around the humanitarian access issue in Gaza, both for the period that was assessed and subsequently.
And then you have Blinken and Cameron shaking hands. Can you talk about what President Biden is saying, what's happening on the ground in Gaza, and why what the U.S. does matters, not to mention Britain saying they're continuing arms sales?
Well, President Biden referred to Israeli policy towards the Gaza Strip as a mistake. I mean, a mistake is when you take a wrong turn at a traffic light, or perhaps when a surgeon removes the wrong kidney. But when over the course of 6 months, half a year, you kill tens of thousands of people, with perhaps additional tens of thousands buried under the rubble and decomposing, that's not a mistake. That's a deliberate policy, and that's why Israel has been hauled in front of the International Court of Justice on charges of genocide. I think the second issue here is that words are cheap and statements are a dime a dozen, and Israel over the decades has learned that it can safely ignore statements, whether by U.S. or European decision makers, that are essentially playing to the gallery. Because what really matters is not what these people say, but what they do. And when the United States, United Kingdom, the European Union indicate that there is not going to be any consequences, that Israel will continue to be allowed to act with impunity, that there will be no consequences for Israel's actions, then Israel's leaders, whether Netanyahu or any of his predecessors, know that they can safely ignore statements such as the ones we've been hearing.
Muin Rabbani, I wanted to ask you, the UN Security Council is going to make a formal decision on Palestine's bid for full UN membership this month. But the U.S. Will likely veto this if it is approved. And the U.S. is saying that Palestine needs to negotiate statehood with Israel before it is granted statehood by the UN. Your response to this, since obviously when Israel was admitted into the UN, the Palestinians were not asked to first negotiate Israel's statehood.
Well, I think the U.S., despite several statements over the years to the contrary, has had a consistent position against Palestinian self-determination, against Palestinian statehood. It has recently voted against several resolutions in the U.N. General Assembly reaffirming the inalienable right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. And essentially, what the U.S. government is saying is that it will not support Palestinian statehood unless Israel does so. And Israel's position is crystal clear on this matter. It rejects Palestinian statehood. So, in other words, the U.S. is subcontracting its position on Palestinian statehood to Israel and adopting it as its own.
And I also wanted to ask you about Prime Minister Netanyahu claiming that the date is set for the attack on Rafah, but at the same time, Palestinians are being allowed to return to Khan Yunis after Israel basically destroyed that city. What your response to that?
I think that's a situation that is a little unclear because both the United States and the Europeans have come out against an Israeli ground operation in Rafah. Netanyahu has claimed the date for that operation has already been set. His